this is the question that I would say is the real question. Should there be in our lives somewhere so private that only we can look at it? Do we as people deserve to have it? And focusing on the smartphone maybe is kind of misleading. Should we as people have somewhere we can put stuff that nobody, including law enforcement, can look at?
We have that. That's called our brains.
Yeah, it already exists as a space that's protected.
But it holds so little, in my case. and it's unfortunately flawed in its ability to recollect perfectly.
A smartphone is an extension to your brain.
If this were an extension of the brain, do you think it deserves that kind of protection?
Chris Vance, who spoke at the congressional hearings on behalf of all the state and local DAs, he said that hundreds of years of jurisprudence have given us this the view that no vessel, no safe, no home is exempt from a warrant.
Except your brain.
Except your brain.
So that's an interesting question. So nobody's proposing. I hope they don't. You know what? They're not proposing it because they don't have the technology. Let's let's go forward in time, 20 years, when the technology exists to read your mind. And law enforcement says then, well, there's stuff in there. If we could read your mind, we'd know if you were guilty or not. OJ, if we could read OJ's mind, we wouldn't have to have a trial. We'd just find out. And then they say to whoever is the Apple of the 22nd century, can you get us in there?
Why is that any different from a polygraph?
Should they be allowed to do that? Well, polygraph's not admissible in court to this day because it's imperfect. It's imperfect.
Okay.
Let's say you could do a perfect mind read. We're talking to the Supreme Court of 2050. I'd say no. I think that's a
self-incrimination, isn't it?
But that's what the Fifth Amendment protects you against, right?
So. Okay.
So I think that was a good point to make, Harry, because if this is an extension of the brain, if a smartphone is an extension of the brain, should it have those protections? Should it be private or not?
Well, arguing against my own case, I mean, pen and paper have always been extensions of the brain, too. It's just that it's way harder to lock up pen and paper than it is.
Yeah, we're here because technology has given us a way to take the part of our brain, put it somewhere, and have it be invisible.
And technology is almost but not quite there.
You know? It isn't, by the way. And that's another story here, which is that the FBI, if they wanted to, probably could hack that 5C. Jonathan Zdarsky, who is probably – there's probably no one more expert on iOS forensics, is of the opinion, yeah, you know what? There's ways if they really wanted to. They don't want to. They want to establish a precedent. So let's not talk about that 5C. That's not the important point. The important point is, do we need something except for our brain, besides our brain, that we can keep to ourselves private, including keep it away from law enforcement? And you're right. Historically, law enforcement, with appropriate court authority, has had access to everything but our brain. Is that right? Is that accurate?
And our spouses, like you can't, I mean, in terms of the self-incrimination
thing. Yeah, that's a good point. Spouse's brain.
Yeah, it's a really novel argument to suggest, and I wonder if somebody will argue this at some point, that this is part of the right to not self-incriminate and that the smartphone is an extension of your brain. I love that argument too. I'm not sure that it would actually ever work, but I like the idea because how my wife's iPhone broke yesterday, and she drove somewhere today to pick up my son, and she said, you know, I'm out there and thinking, I'm an adult. I can do this without a phone. But we have offloaded so much of this work to our phones. And so I think that's an interesting argument. It seems unlikely to me that anybody's ever going to go for it. But
I like that.
I agree
Thank
with
you,
that.
Harry.
It's more of an ethical argument than a legal one.
But it is. We're not talking law here. And of course, that's why the law makes interesting provisions like the wife. If you're just my girlfriend, you can incriminate me. But if you're my wife, you can't. That's just the law saying, kind of carving out where those lines are against self-incrimination.
But at the very
least,
we're
not talking about law. We're talking about ethics. We're talking about principle.
Well, and the existence of a safe space. The very existence of what somebody called a warrant-proof place, where there was a piece linked to, John Gruber linked to it from Daring Fireball, about this matter. And somebody said, do we really think we want to have a place that's warrant-proof? And the answer is that place exists already. It's in our minds. It's not a novel concept. Not everywhere is reachable, or should it be reachable, by law enforcement.
It's like Steve Jobs said, the computer is a bicycle for the mind. And that's even more true of smartphones than it ever was of PCs.
I think this is much more interesting conversation than the nitty-gritty of the decryption that we've been going through for the last few weeks. And it's not obvious. I don't think, you know, you can, if you're a technologist, people yell at me for saying, well, there's more to this than just, yes, we should have encryption. There's lots to talk about. And people get mad at me for not just, you know, defending the right to encryption. But I do think it's a larger discussion. And when you kind of eliminate it from this kind of technical discussion, but say, is there somewhere else besides your brain that should be private? That's a tougher question to answer.
Just to play devil's advocate on this, though, it's much more than a receptacle. It's a transmission device.
Right.
It's a knowledge center. So I think it's much more complicated than that. If you said, I have my personal hard drive, that is the extension of my memory, and that is a separate being, it's like, you know, there's a lot about separation in that that may play into that mm-hmm. metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, our knowledge base and our brain, but if we say something, it's admissible, right? And that's our transmission device. I can make that argument.
Right, but
they
can't
force
you
to give up your password, but they can force you to give up a hair for a DNA sample
or a fingerprint to unlock
your phone.
Yeah.
I think you could make a pretty strong case that this is separate. This is distinct from your brain. This is your phone. It's not your brain.
No.
The fact that you willingly put all your brain stuff in there doesn't somehow give it some special protection.
Right. It's your own choice.
You chose to do that. I would argue that for purposes of law enforcement, the smartphone should not be somehow specially protected.
Okay, so then what I think evolved...
I think your brain should be protected. I don't, in this 2050 scenario, hypothetical, I think I would be horrified if they said, oh, no, they can read your mind and find out if you're guilty. That would be horrific. I think we'll probably come to that day sometime.
Can they compel you to take an x-ray or do anything like that?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's not deemed that your body can incriminate you. So giving your fingerprint or a DNA sample or an x-ray is not considered currently by our courts as self-incrimination. That's the testimony of your thumb. And that's admissible, oddly enough. But that's all artificial. We've carved these rules out.
Fortunately, encrypting things that the government can't get to is not illegal at this point. The issue is the government wants the manufacturers of systems that use encryption to have ways to get in so that it's not just between you and your device, but that there's a third party involved, which is the manufacturer or the government.
That's making it illegal to have encryption from a practical point of view. Right?
Well, I mean, I think what would happen if they made it illegal for Apple to make an encrypted iPhone that Apple couldn't break into at the behest of the government would be that all the people who do have something that they're plotting, like terrorists and other criminals, would switch to third-party software that could be compiled using known encryption and would be encrypted in a way that Apple couldn't get at. I mean, they would just move the game somewhere else. It would be everybody else that's left with the third-party broken encryption.
If encryption is criminal, then only criminals will have encryption.
It's kind of what Tim Cook was saying in his interview with ABC is I'm not trying to protect the terrorist. Bad guys will always have ways to do this effectively. I'm trying to protect the average person. Apple's job is to protect to put these tools in the hands of normal people who aren't sophisticated technically.
And it's pretty remarkable that the bad guys have not all switched to the most bulletproof possible.
They're not too bright. That's why they're bad guys. Really.
They're not organized enough.
That's one of the things law enforcement always tells me is, you know, I say, well, what if somebody has strong encryption and a password? They say, you know what? Most of the time they just tell us their password.
Right.
Crooks, for the most part, what law enforcement deals with is not such bright crooks. And if somebody is very sophisticated, and unfortunately that tends to be terrorists, you know, the ISIS types, if they're that sophisticated, it's pretty hard to deal with. Took us how long to get Osama bin Laden? Because he was smart enough to cut himself off from the internet.
Well,
would only deal with a courier.
And because we made it public that they were tracking him with his satellite phone, and so he went dark on satellite phones.
Right.
Which, again, has a parallel here, which is if we say Apple has the, you know, backdoor key. I said I wasn't going to say backdoor, I did it. If Apple has this key, then that tells terrorists or organized criminals to go use different platforms, GPG.
Yeah.
I have a question. I didn't know if you guys could answer this. So I thought it was really interesting this week, the conversation about that Apple does have the ability to absolutely provide single access to individual devices with keys that are individual to the devices themselves. This was Steve Gibson's whole thing about the individual number is generated by the phone.
His point was that if Apple made a revised firmware, it would be signed for that one phone and that one phone only.
Right.
That the signing that Apple does with firmware entangles, I think that's the term Apple uses, their key, their special crypto key with a unique identifier of the phone, so that that firmware is unique to that phone.
Right.
And so his position was Apple could make a modified firmware that would only be usable on that 5C.
And that's burned into the boot ROM, right?
Yeah.
So my question is that in the OS or in the hardware manufacturer?
It's
of the
in
phone?
The secure enclave.
So
that's hardware.
So that means that if the phones are made by Huawei or made by HTC, that if we extend this beyond Apple, that it's the hardware makers that have to do this.
Right. In fact, it was Jonathan Zdarsky's point that one way to do this would be to actually physically copy the contents of the chip on the phone from one. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, he's smarter than I am, but I'm not sure exactly how he's proposing to do this. But
You mean to create a mirror of the hard drive?
He said,
and just keep replicating it as you try and crack the.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
In other words, exactly right. You could continue to try it. It wouldn't worry if it erased itself after 10 tries because you have a copy of it.
Right.
It's still encrypted.
My question about
the other thing is, by the way, let's point out your iCloud is not safe because Apple has the keys, period.
Yes.
And Apple's
point. It's already a third party in the middle.
Apple's point was, if they had just let the thing back up, we could have given you the information. In fact, I think that's going to be Apple's strongest defense in the end is that the FBI screwed up. It seemed to be in the testimony in Congress that Congress was upset that the FBI had screwed up.
Yeah, Apple that didn't said, go as well as the FBI thought it was going to go.
No, it did not. Some tough questions from Daryl Issa and others. But Congress seemed upset that, well, wait a minute, you're saying you're putting this burden on Apple because you didn't do the right thing? Well, that kind of lets Apple off the hook. It unfortunately also kicks the can down the road of this big issue.
Yeah, doesn't it, though?
Should there be,
their
encryption?
Their perfect test case has been corrupted.
And there is this whole fascinating question of the government telling companies that have done nothing wrong here, you need to create this solution for us, whether that is legal.
Right. There's the argument that Apple, if this became standard procedure, then every law enforcement group around the world would be going to Apple and asking for Apple engineers to write software to access Apple hardware. And at what point do you, not to make a slippery slope argument, but how many employees does Apple need to pay to do the work of law enforcement in order to be in business selling phones?
And what happens when China gets upset over something involving free speech?
Well, Apple's right to say this is a bad idea from a purely business point of view.
Okay. So let's go back to my original premise that this is the moonshot. So Susan Landau, who testified before Congress, she said the biggest problem with asking Apple to create their own internal compliance to unlock the thousands of phones that are in the judicial backlog is that anyone who's involved in compliance, be it ADA compliance, tax compliance, they know that this becomes the smallest priority in the company's budgeting. It's something they have to do. It has no benefit to the company. It's just a compulsion. Therefore, you get low-level employees. They start.
And they're more likely to give you up.
It's the easiest one for organized crime, for state-sponsored terrorists, or for corporate espionage to get in there and get that key.
What's the moonshot? They're saying government should do this?
Her point is that this is a cat-and-mouse game and that the government has not kept up with the ability to be able to decrypt these phones on their own, and that their outsourcing of this and compulsion of an Apple, ultimately a Samsung, et cetera, is a deficiency in their own.
Yeah. What I think she's mistaken, what it sounds like she's saying is, well, we should just have, we should build some giant quantum computers so that we can break encryption.
Or hire a bunch of hackers to build zero-day exploits that only knows about.
We know we've done that.
Well, sure.
And Snowden told us
NSA
that.
NSA certainly has done that.
I think it's a foolish idea to think that you can defeat the math. The math is strong in this one. And it would be a mistake for the government to say, well, we're just going to build faster computers because we just make longer keys. It's not, that's not a hard thing to beat. And so that's not the way to go after this.
Okay, we'll combine that with Jonathan Zdarsky's theory that you could then mirror the image.
You have to take advantage of flaws.
Right.
The reason the mirror imaging works is because there is a flawed front door, which is this 4 or 6-digit code. That's just a bad passcode. That's all. It's not a. If you had a strong password, wouldn't matter. Encryption's encryption. The math is sound, and that's what's really challenging for this, because I don't think there's anything the government can do unless it says it mandates that encryption not be allowed. It has to do fundamentally what you just said, Jason Snell, which is make encryption illegal. And that's not going to work, because encryption's a math.
Right. It's like making math illegal, and we can't make math illegal.
You can't. So you just make American encryption bad. Big. How effective is that?
I feel like I'm playing devil's advocate, or at least what I'm interested in, because it's become such an echo chamber, I think, in the tech community of saying, like, well, encryption has to be legal. We have to continue this. So I've been trying to listen this week to all the different sides of it. And one of them that I found interesting was General Keith Anderson. He was the former NSA director. He was on Bloomberg. And his point was, A, look for the technical solution. I think we've discussed that. But he said the other option would be to look for a third-party solution. I think it's a little out there, but I'm just posing it because I'd like to hear
your
thoughts.
They don't want to say the true thing, which is you need to make encryption illegal. The government tried to do this before with very negative effects. When they said we cannot export strong encryption, as a result, we used 40-bit keys, which was weak, and that was allowed to export. And no browser company was going to make a separate version of the browser for U.S. and the rest of the world. So we had 40-bit keys in our browsers. And to this day, it continues to bite us because we still support this weak encryption technology in our browsers. And we're still trying to get this stuff out of there because it's such an easy target. That was a perfect example of the unintended negative consequence of making weak encryption. You just can't do it effectively. And so if the question is, and I think we've come to that point, conclusion, the question is, should encryption be illegal? There's no question that the answer is there's nothing you can do about it.
I think
can't make it illegal,
but
unilaterally.
I think you're on to something, though, this idea of an almost like an arms race more than a moonshot, that seems to be where this has to go, is encryption will improve and people's counter encryption efforts will improve. There's theoretically quantum computers will at some point be able to decrypt things at a much higher rate. There are going to be security flaws that can be exploited, but